101.7 FM, 710 Keel. My friend Scott Hughes in for Mike Martindale, and we're joined on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline by Shreveport Mayor Tom Arsenault. Thanks for joining us, sir.
Sure, good morning.
Got some good news. Looks like you've gotten a grant from the EPA to do some work across Bayou and Ledbetter Heights. Explain what you've gotten.
Well, we had applied. We have some property that we own and some property adjacent to it along Cross Bayou on the south side of Cross Bayou. This is going to involve the Deanna Produce building that the city owns,
right?
And some adjacent property, and then some property in Ledbetter Heights and perhaps along Texas Avenue. We're not necessarily restricted to those areas, but that was our targeted area for the grant. So we're very excited about it because we know, or at least we suspect, in that area there was some industrial activity in that area a long time ago, and we suspect that there is some contamination in that soil. So to put it back into commerce and be able to do something with it eventually, we need to clean it up.
Good morning, Mayor. This is Scott Hughes.
Scott.
Good morning. So if I understand you, is this more of a brownfields, what we'd call a brownfields type grant to help you physically clean something up, not a planning grant?
It is not a planning grant. It is for investigation and cleanup.
Okay, and that would be for the property that only the city owns. Could it be for property that other people own as well?
I'm not entirely sure of that, but I believe the answer is yes.
How soon do you anticipate that to start, and will the city have to spend some money on top of the $1 million from the feds?
There's no local match to this, so this is $1 million that we don't have to put any up for.
Okay, you know how old I am. You know I go back a minute. We passed a bond issue in 1996.
She's been doing research this morning, Tom.
You know,
be ready.
You know I have this in my back pocket. I always have. We did a bond issue in 1996 to purchase land for use for a public park on Cross Bayou. We have purchased some land. I think we purchased that Deanna Produce building under Mayor Perkins. We have purchased some other land. And we still have, at last report, I think about $3 million or $2.5 million from that 96 bond issue to purchase land and build a park on Cross Bayou. A, are you aware of that? And B, are we headed in that direction finally?
The answer to A is yes. The answer to B is what we'd really like to do is to combine that with some other development that would produce a park, but would also might also produce some other kinds of development along Cross Bayou.
Like, give me some idea, because I love that part of that. When the city owns waterfront property, I am so excited about that. What kinds of things would you like to see there?
Well, one of the things I'd really like us to possibly see is a hotel. That Deanna property is right across the railroad tracks from the Hilton. And it was something like a hotel there would, or other developments. You know, we seriously looked at selling or long-term leasing the Deanna property to a produce company for a market and a headquarters. Unfortunately, the Deanna building is not structurally sound.
Mm-hmm.
That's what caused that deal to fall. They just couldn't use it. So we need to look for something that would perhaps complement the convention center. But we're open to any ideas that somebody may have if they bring their own money.
Right. A hotel would be financed privately, I assume. It's not going to be a city-financed hotel.
Correct.
Do you have any nibbles on that yet?
Oh, I have. There are always people who are expressing an interest, but we haven't had. I would say the bobbin has bobbed a couple of times, but it hasn't ever gone under the water.
And so, Tom, you're talking about and Cross Bayou and developing that area. So is this in a way to support the convention center? I know the new state office building is sort of just up the road nearing completion. Right. Is that the stretch of the bayou you're looking at, that south shore along that part of downtown?
Yeah, it runs along and behind the convention center. You know, that McNeil Street, for example, one of the things that we might do at some point is to improve half a block of McNeil Street that runs behind the convention center. There are lots of ideas. This makes those ideas come more to the forefront because we can do something. We now can do something that might help somebody develop that property.
Would the city be, if you got some folks that were nibbling on it, maybe 50 Cent, maybe, you know, who knows, would the city be interested? Once you get it cleaned up, because nobody's going to come in and buy it if it needs cleaned up. But this, you hope, will take care of the cleanup and make the property more marketable, I would assume.
That's what our hope is, yes. We hope that this will clear this property and enable us to make it available for development or to develop it ourselves. As you said, there is money in there for a park. I would rather use that park as leverage for a greater development.
The Deanna Produce property, we spent, I think, $460,000 on it. Do we know the value of it now? Is it worth more, less?
I don't know. I don't know what it's worth. I'm trying to remember, in connection with the other proposed deal that we were working on, I don't remember whether we had it appraised or not.
Okay.
But that unfortunately that building is going to have to be demolished.
So at this point, that's more of a land deal now. Is that what you're saying, Tom? The building's not structurally salvageable, but the land holds value.
Correct.
How long would you think, Mayor, that it's going to take to do the cleanup and any remediation that's needed?
I don't know. I'll have to talk with our environmental manager, Wes Weich, and see what it will take. We've got to do some cores and run some tests and that kind of thing to find out exactly what needs to be done. But we're going to move on it as quick as we can.
And I guess last question, Tom. We're getting what kind of timeline you're on? When do you get the money? When do you have to spend it by?
We will get the money shortly. You know, after you get this grant, then you've got grant agreements and those kinds of things. So we've got to do that. It may, I may have to get a council resolution to accept the grant, and that will move forward. I would hope that we would have the money before the end of the year and begin to work on it.
Mayor Tom Arsenault, thanks for your time, sir. We appreciate it.
Sure enough. Thank you all for calling.
Thanks, Mayor.
101.7 FM, 710 Keith.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
We are back. My pal Scott Hughes is here. Thanks for coming in. I appreciate you.
It's Monday morning.
Yes, it is Monday morning. After the election, we have a lot to unravel with regard to that.
We got a few things to talk about this week.
Yeah, we do. We have a lot to unravel. I first want you to do, and Ruben, you might have to help too. A math problem for me.
Math on the radio's never good. Yeah, Ruben, I'm with you.
And a human problem, okay?
Oh, Ruben does. Ruben knows the human condition well.
Yeah.
He's an artist.
I got all of them.
Here we go. Through the drive-thru, my tab is 819, okay? 819. I pull out $9. I hand the young lady $9. I'm not going to say where or what I was doing.
Are you wanting change or just giving her $9?
I'm wanting change.
You want 81 cents change.
81 cents change. Yeah, I'm expecting that anyway. She hands me my drink. She hands me my bag. Thank you. I said, my change? What? My change? And she looked at me as if, seriously, you want change? She literally gave me the go to hell look for over 81 cents. Like, I'm supposed to leave her an 81 cent tip on a $8.19 purchase. And she goes, oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. Here's what happened next. This is what troubles me. She walks from the cash register where she was, and the receipt said, give me 81 cents back. You know, it said, here's her change.
Mm-hmm.
She walks from the cash register over across the store to someone else to talk to them about what to do.
Because she's already rang it out.
That could be the problem. Then she walks back over with my change, which she had gotten from the other side of the restaurant. Hands me 80. She gave me 80 cents. She gave me an extra penny.
And that's now fine because pennies don't exist anymore.
I told this story to several people this weekend, and you know what the answer was? It wasn't that she was expecting a tip. It was that she didn't know how to count the change out to give me the right change.
Whoa.
And that never hit me.
Huh.
She didn't know how to count out 80 cents. What do I give her back? Do I give her a quarter? Do I give her two quarters? She didn't know. Could that really be true?
Probably. And I'm going to say it could be. Could be a combination of both of those things. I think for starters, she was assuming you would just say keep the change. That seems to be the mode. Wouldn't you agree, Ruben? I mean,
Yeah, that's confusing. That's really confusing.
Because otherwise she would have started out with trying to give you a change or something.
Right.
And then my first take is she's already locked her register out. She already,
right.
You know, she already rang it up like you're going to give me 9 and she's going to just give it back,
right,
or whatever.
On these computerized cash registers, like once you close the cash drawer, there's like you have to do something else to open it.
Takes a manager to now open it.
Right.
Okay, then help me.
Now, step three, she might not have been able to count the change.
Also that.
Am I a cheapskate for not just saying keep the change?
Well, I mean, you're a big tipper there, Miss 10%.
But it's a drive-through. Should we be doing that at a drive? 80 cents?
It's
10% tip on an $8 meal?
Yeah, tipping at the drive-through is a very new thing that I don't quite understand.
Now, for the record, I keep a stack of $1 bills in my car. You know, not going to say what I drive, but I keep a stack of $1 bills. And when I go through some of these drive-thrus, particularly the ones where they bring me out a drink, we're not going to pay a franchise, I always give a dollar bill.
I'm okay with that. I'm okay. But then
I get my change first. I get my change, and I tip back a dollar bill. I want you to know it's a tip.
Mm-hmm. Here's the problem. I look in the bag. There's no napkins. There's drink flowing over the cup. So they didn't even wipe the cup down. I have no napkin to wipe. You didn't give me any extraordinary service.
Right.
You gave me crappy service.
Right.
And you want to keep my 80 cent change?
81 cent change.
Yeah. I was flabbergasted by the look she gave me. It was a go to hell B look, cheapskate B look. And I thought, but then other people this weekend said she might not have been able to count the change.
Were you driving the Lexus in the drive-thru when you did this?
Hush up. I left the Bentley at home. Yeah. We're going to unravel the election when we come back in the longer segment. We'll have a short segment first, then a long segment where Scott will tell us how Julia Letlow won. Will she win in November? How big will that be? All that is coming up right here. 101.7 FM, 710 Key.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel.
Okay, we have a little bit of an update on, you heard Gary in the traffic talking about a train derailment. And I just got this from the Caddo Sheriff's Office.
This is North Caddo Parish, right?
Yes. Thanks to the folks that are on the spot this morning. At 6:12 this morning, a Caddo deputy came across a possible minor train derailment around 13701 Highway 1. KCS called in at 6:20 to advise they have a representative en route to assess the damages. Lieutenant is also en route to the scene. More information to follow when it becomes available. They don't have any other details at this point. They are on the way to the scene, probably arriving right about now. But again, that's Highway 1, 13,000 block of Highway 1 on the northern side of Caddo Parish. So just keep that in mind. That's what the emergency traffic there will be about. It sounds like it's a minor train derailment. It doesn't sound like it's a bunch of cars jumping the
tracks. We don't know yet if it's blocking traffic or not. Just there is possible problem on Highway 1.
Yes, exactly. When we come back, Scott, we're going to unravel the election.
It took place.
Yeah, the turnout. What
happened? Some people showed up.
Yeah, a few people. Man, I was number 5.
More showed up before the election than on the election.
That was surprising. Very surprising. We will take a close look at that coming up right here on 101.7 FM at 710 Keel.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarthy on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
We are back. Mike is on vacation. It is so good to have a political analyst extraordinaire as guest host the Monday after an election. Scott Hughes in studio with me this morning. Scott, I know you have crunched numbers. You have looked at the results in the Senate race in Louisiana. Julia Letlow was really an easy winner over John Fleming. It really wasn't close in the grand scheme of things, right?
I don't think it was. I mean, we talked about this Friday, and I think I told you Friday I thought she'd win. Mm-hmm. I think I told you Friday I thought she'd win by 10 points. She won by 14.
Yeah.
And so, no, I don't think it was ever really a race. I thought she was the front runner the whole time. And it'll be interesting to watch the fallout of this because what I noticed, the first thing I noticed looking at the numbers is in the first round, when Bill Cassidy was in the race, Cassidy, Fleming, Letlow got 197,000 votes statewide. Saturday, with Cassidy gone, Letlow got 197,000 votes statewide.
Same thing.
I mean, obviously, there's a few other numbers in the end there, but from a statistical standpoint, Letlow got the exact same vote. 197. Turnout went down.
Mm-hmm.
Republican turnout dropped by about 22%.
Ooh.
She held her vote, and Fleming still couldn't catch her. I think I did say...
Now, what did his how did his votes compare from May to this
one? He came up, certainly, because he was in the mid to low 20s in the first race, and then he came up a little bit to the 140, I think, some in that neighborhood, 135. But no, he never really was competitive in my mind. And that's why I took a lot of heat because I said this the first night.
Mm-hmm.
And I said at the first round, I basically didn't think he should run the race. I saw no reason to run the race. All we just did on the Republican side was spend millions of dollars to dirty both candidates, Fleming, who is now still our state treasurer.
Sure.
And Letlow, who very likely will be our U.S. senator.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the problem with closed primaries. And we haven't had them in Louisiana for a long time. And what we saw was what a lot of other places around the country have. We had a little R-on-R action that achieved nothing.
Yes.
It burned money and it dirtied Letlow as a candidate. Because what I saw all day Sunday was my conservative friends, many of them bemoaning how they cannot vote for Letlow now. And we'll have, I think, Dr. Sato will be on later on, and I've always appreciate his insights. And it'll be very interesting to get the insight of where some of this real conservative base goes. But they've been told now for not 1 month, they've been told now for 6 months that this lady is woke, that she's DEI.
She's a rhino,
She's a rhino. Mm-hmm. And now they're being told, but you have to go vote for her.
Yep,
and that's going to be hard. And then what I really noticed, particularly Sunday in the post-analysis comments, is there was one issue that really rose to the surface in this race in the Republican primary.
And it
was? That's not going away. It's carbon capture.
Really?
The carbon capture crowd is really mad because they see Letlow as just really an enemy of, to be honest, private property rights.
Mm-hmm.
And they just don't know where they're going to go forward.
Overall voter turnout. There were some saying it might get 15%. Did we get to 15% or was it well under that?
We don't have final numbers on the statewide yet.
Okay.
We do have final numbers within a parish because we can look at those more closely. Most of the parish numbers are sitting between 15 and 16%. Mm-hmm. I think statewide could be about the same. But remember, statewide numbers can be driven a lot by Orleans Parish. There's just so many voters down there. We did see higher turnout, or I'll say it differently. We saw smaller drop-off. It's the better way to say it.
Okay.
We saw a smaller drop-off on the Republican side. Republican turnout was down about 22%. Democratic turnout was down about 40%.
Woo.
Now, in fairness, the Republicans had a contested ballot.
Yes.
Well, even though I'm saying I didn't think Fleming could win, and he didn't, it was still more contested.
Absolutely.
And we had this fired up base on the right, particularly over carbon capture.
Mm-hmm.
I think on the Democratic side, turnout dropped a little more, but there was no question Jamie Davis was going to win. Matter of fact, the Democrats actually convalesced. By the way, Jamie Davis won 80-20, if you weren't paying attention to that side.
I saw something that I found astonishing, and I may have the numbers wrong, so don't count on the numbers. But I saw, let's say, Caddo Parish, and I believe it was Caddo, 4,500 early votes and 3,000 votes on Saturday.
No, not exactly true.
Okay.
Your concept, actually, when you mentioned this right off air, had not looked at these numbers yet, so I did pull them. So let's look at Caddo Parish.
Okay.
On the Democratic side, the Democratic ballot, there were a total of 10,500 ballots cast in the Democratic primary Saturday. 4,072 were early votes.
Okay.
Okay? So that's 40%. Okay?
Wow. Okay.
And then on the Republican side, there were 12,529 total votes cast. 3,448 so far were cast early vote, about 23%, which is the pattern that we always see. Democratic voters often have a higher turnout early.
Right.
And Republicans like to vote on election day. And you saw that in the numbers.
I saw one parish where it was astonishingly the early vote was like 50% higher. And
and it could be. One of the things, let's talk about early voting, particularly mail-in voting.
Mm-hmm.
It's very popular in rural parishes. And if you live in the city of Shreveport or Bossier City, you get up, drive to the elementary school down the street, and you vote.
Yeah.
But in rural parishes, you might have to drive 10, 12 miles. And
so
the early voting is very popular, and the more rural the parish, and that's why there are certain states, I've always said there's like seven states, but it's like Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Colorado. Those states do very well with mail balloting.
Okay. Coming up after 7 o'clock, I don't want to say this out loud, but I have to apologize. To the mayor.
Did you jump the gun?
To the public works director. To the Sportran director. To the SPAR director. I'm going to apologize to all of them after 7. I'll explain why.
Did they move something? I can't wait to find out.
I went on a tirade and my tirade was... anyway, I still have a little bit of a pib. I'll explain it to you after 7.
You have Night Street PSD.
Yeah, I really do. We'll talk more about that coming up after 7, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
I have a question to ask you, and I didn't give you this in your show prep, which was non-existent. I didn't say that, but...
Show prep? Wait, people get show prep on this show?
Excuse me, I'm choking up. Sam Jenkins came out and said that the city of Bossier has won $23 million from the state to improve their water treatment efforts. This will help the city upgrade their water system, which could help alleviate problems in the future. How does Bossier get that and not Shreveport? Doesn't Shreveport need that way more than Bossier? And I'm sorry, Bossier, I don't want to jerk your money around, but I'm thinking, what happened to Shreveport getting some of the money? Are we getting some, or should we be?
I think that'd be a good question for Senator Sam Jenkins, number one, since he's the one that announced it. Number two, to be honest, I have not gone through the state capital outlay budget yet and seen who got all what. I did see some other people are putting some numbers out. But at the end of the day, the big rule in politics is you normally get it because you asked. Let's start with that. And then number two, you get it because politically you got the votes.
Okay.
And we live in a very, I shouldn't say this without knowing the facts, but, you know, I mean, the governor can veto, the governor can approve, the legislature has the votes, and, you know.
Could it be a case, too, that Shreveport's system needs so much that a $23 million check would be like, this is a drop in the bucket. We're not going to make any headway here.
Well, the other thing I was going to say is it's also priorities.
Okay.
You know, I mean, it's probably where each community probably has so much credit, quote unquote, down there.
Okay.
So much ask that they can ask. And the city of Bossier may have prioritized that. They take care of a lot of things, security, police, et cetera. Okay. They may have said, look, this is what we need. We need this cash help right now to build X.
Right.
And they asked for it. Whereas, yes, the city of Shreveport has $1 billion in infrastructure, water, and sewage. You're not going to get that from the state. And they may have had equivalent $20 million may have gone somewhere else. They may have had overpasses or roads or things they wanted done.
Okay. Just a reminder, there is a train derailment. It's classified as a minor train derailment, 13,000 block of Highway 1. That's up near Soda Point Drive. KCS called in about 6:12 this morning. A deputy came across a minor train derailment. KCS on the scene. Deputies are on the scene. They're trying to get more information to us as soon as they can. We don't know, you know, if how many cars are derailed or if there's any kind of substance or anything like that. It doesn't sound like it's a hazmat situation or anything of that sort yet. The sheriff is actually, Sheriff Henry Whitehorn responded to me, said they're working on getting details out. So anyway, that's what's happening in the northern part of the parish. That's north of, between Blanchard and Oil City, I guess, somewhere in that area.
Yeah, you're getting up in the northern part of Paris there. And again, minor train derailment, that price just probably means, as you said, no hazmat,
right,
no road blockage. But okay, any train derailment, it's not minor. It's going to take them a while to clean that up.
Yeah.
Get that train right.
Yeah, it's hard to get a train back up on the tracks. And, you know, you never know what causes it either. So who knows? But that's what's going on. Caddo deputies will be on the scene there for quite some time, I would assume. And they will have crews up there trying to get that taken care of. But that's going on northern part of the parish. Throughout the morning, Scott Hughes will be assessing the political fallout from the election. We'll talk with him more about that. Dr. Jeffrey Satto is going to join us in the 8 o'clock hour. Coming up after 7, I got to do a little, sorry.
Mea culpa?
Yeah.
Have you called the mayor and said, you up? I'm going to apologize?
Not yet. I'm going to shoot him a question. I do have a question to ask of him.
But this is going to be actually good. This actually restores your faith a little bit in the process, doesn't it?
Yeah, I was worried about what kind of idiot did what they did, and now maybe I'm the idiot, so we'll see. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel. I'm just going to get this out of the way. Mike's out of town.
Scott, Ruben, you taping this?
Yeah. Scott's here. Scott Hughes is here. I went on quite the tirade last week about Knight Street again. And I'm sorry. I know people are like, would you shut up about Knight Street? Let me just tell you that picture Preston, where there's a sidewalk on the north side. Sidewalk all down Preston Street to the parkway on the north side.
This is the Shreve, Knight Street in the Shreve City area.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to go through all this and not start with, I'm sorry, I apologize.
I'll get there. And there's not a sidewalk on the south side of Preston. And so I'd often thought when they do Knight Street and when they do the sidewalks, do a sidewalk on the east side of Knight Street where all those apartment complexes
are. Over the last decade, you figured, it would be taken care
of. That's pretty simple. We don't need a sidewalk on the west side. Especially by the wetlands that go down toward the Y.
And the wet side's the side with Eastridge and the Bayou, wetlands.
That's the only residential section on that side
of
the road.
And there's some businesses on that side,
Lots of businesses. There's a bar. There's a, you know, lots of things.
A lot more residential on the east side.
Where you need the sidewalk.
The side where Walmart is and the side now where the Y is.
Yeah, and people were walking in
the
street.
Ball fields.
Yes, absolutely. They were walking in mud. And so I was very convinced they're going to build a sidewalk on the east side. That'll be fine. Don't need one on the west. Well, they built a sidewalk on the west from about just north of the TK's, retail complex. Just north of that, they built a sidewalk all the way down to Preston through the wetlands area. You know, right next to the wetlands, all the way down. So I'm thinking, okay, they're going to build a sidewalk the whole way. Further up north on the west side, there's a Sportran bus terminal.
Been there for years.
The
bus stop on that road.
And the sidewalk didn't go there. There was no sidewalk by the bus
terminal. Stops short of the bus terminal.
Stops about 100 yards short of the bus depot thing.
So the bus depot is sort of an island unto itself.
Yes.
Dirt around it.
But a lot of people walk on the west side up there because they come in from, you know, they're coming from Shreveport Barksdale and they're headed to Walmart, so they don't cross the street. So, but there was no sidewalk there. And I raised holy heck about that.
Among other things, it was on your list. Yeah.
Right. Why did you build a sidewalk all the way down by the wetlands that no one will ever use?
You saw incompetence.
I saw horrible design.
Yeah.
Well, I drive by there Friday, and the bus, Sportran bus depot thing on the west side is gone. They've removed it. They have a brand new one across the street. I thought there were just going to be two. Brand new one with a bus lane over there where the bus can get in the lane. Everybody can wait under the shelter.
So they moved it across the street.
Yeah.
They put a little lane for the bus to get off the road.
Oh, yeah.
To go in to pick up. They built a little mini bus terminal.
They did.
On the east side, which is the side with the Walmart and the side with the Y in the ball fields.
Now nobody has to cross the street with their Walmart carts.
That sounds like extraordinary planning.
It was pretty good planning. It was pretty good planning. But, so I apologize for raising hell about that, because you obviously planned to move the bus pickup spot across the street, and so that's why you didn't put the sidewalk over there. But I still find it silly that the sidewalk goes two-thirds of the way up on the west side, but not all the way up to Shreveport-Barksdale Highway. You could have not put it down by the wetlands, which nobody's ever going to use, and put it up there by Shreveport-Barksdale Highway, which people will use.
I haven't been down Knight Street to see this part. I've driven down Knight Street. I didn't look at the sidewalks. Does it come up close to the bus stop, but on the other side of the street now?
It comes up all the way to Shreveport-Barksdale Highway on the other side of the street.
On the east side.
On the east side, it goes all the way, the whole
stretch.
But on
the west side, where does it stop?
It comes up short 100 yards south of the bus, where the bus stop was.
So then you can cross over.
You can cross over and get on the other side, which is fine. But why even build it on the west side anyway? Why did we even do? But I'm going to stop short of being negative, because I do want to apologize, because I really called the planners out.
And that's really what you're trying to do here.
Yes.
You jumped the gun. You assumed it was bad design.
Yes.
When in reality, it was fabulous design.
They planned for the Sportran bus terminal to move across the street, which is a great idea. It's
and
a much better.
And they augmented the service. The bus will actually not block traffic
now.
No,
the bus won't block traffic. We don't have to go around it in the turn lane. I mean, it's a much better design for that area. But I still think the sidewalk would have been better on the west side up there by Shreveport-Barksdale then sidewalk on the west side by the wetlands. And I'm not sure how that design work got done, but knock all
that
out.
Maybe we learn, and maybe we just take a deep breath, and maybe there's a reason that sidewalk was built.
And maybe we couldn't get the right-of-way up closer to Shreveport-Barksdale, but I know Sportran, SPAR owns that facility right there. You know, up there across from Walmart. So I don't know. There's got to be a reason we didn't build the sidewalk up there. I don't know.
I will say this. There is a lot. Go farther south of the bus stop where you're talking. There's now double sidewalks.
Oh, it's huge.
Okay. There is a lot going on there. They've built ball fields, the Y's there.
Yes.
So the ability to have people off the street.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, I'm still on the board of Kubota, but I was president of Kubota for a long, long time. And that became one of our issues out at the Cargill Sports Complex, is that we finally put sidewalks in because people were walking in the street.
Yes.
And when you have so many youth sports events, people park everywhere, you get overwhelmed. You need places where the kids, especially the kids, cannot be walking in the street.
Yes. So I'm going to ask the question about why the sidewalk's not on the west side up by Shreveport-Barksdale Highway. And I'm sure there's a logical explanation that they will be able to tell me.
I bet it's public safety.
It might very well be. It could very well be. We will ask and see and find out if there was some design flaw or if they have a reason for not bringing it all the way up. But for the problem with Sportran, I was the idiot. I apologize for jumping the gun.
So now you're just down to lighting, right?
Oh, don't get me started on that. I want to talk about the court hearing today on the governor's executive order.
I'm assuming you're talking about the teacher pay executive order?
After 7:30, we will get Scott to ruminate about that right here on 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
We are back for a little bit of a shorter segment here. Scott, I wanted to ask you a little bit about, because I've been watching the soccer. You have too. The World Cup soccer is, for me, it's, I know there are a lot of people that are like, oh, we don't care about soccer. But I find it absolutely beautiful. And I find this time of year when we have the World Cup in our country just breathtaking. Some of the matches this weekend were narrowing the field down to the final 32. And then we had one of the knockout games yesterday where Canada won.
Yeah, Saturday was the last group stage, mm-hmm. and some phenomenal games, especially late. You and I were talking about one off the air. And then yesterday started there's 16. It's called the round of 32. Mm-hmm. So there'll be 16 games in this round. And the first one was last night. It was Canada versus South Africa.
Oh.
And now we get three a day for the next couple days.
Yes, I'm so excited. And I wanted you to explain, because you did a little work on this. With regard to these games can no longer end in a tie. We have to have a winner.
Correct. Normal soccer can have ties, and mm-hmm. whether it's the Premier League in the regular season, a high school soccer game, or pool play in the World Cup, they can end in ties. They use a point system, 3 points for a win, 1 point for a tie, 0 points for a loss. So ties are okay. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, you often play for a tie in soccer. But when you get to the knockout round, the elimination round, like in the NCAA men's tournament or women's tournament, you have to have a winner. And so the way soccer works is after 90 minutes, two 45-minute halves, mm-hmm. and the extra time, which you don't like, and they add for a few minutes, whatever.
Stoppage
when
time,
the game has ended, after the 90 minutes plus, mm-hmm. if it's still tied, they will play 30 more minutes. Two 15-minute periods. And they are not what's called golden goal. A goal does not win the game.
So you're going to play the 30 minutes regardless.
Correct. Kind of like baseball plays the extra inning top and bottom regardless.
Okay,
and
right.
So they'll play 15 minutes. They'll switch sides. They'll play 15 minutes. And then the game would be over at that point. If it's still tied, then they go to a shootout, what's called a PK shootout.
Mm-hmm.
And in a shootout, each team puts up five players. The five players are each going to get basically a penalty kick, one mm-hmm. after another, and whoever has the most points after that wins. If you're tied after five shooters, you go to the sixth shooter, the seventh shooter. And there probably is nothing more dramatic in sports than a PK shootout.
I was talking to you about that. If I had to pick the most dramatic moment in sports for me as a spectator, I like those horse races down to the nose. I love those. Those are great. But I love a PK shootout. All the pressure on this one kid to make this one goal at that moment. And I remember many a day, my kid was one of the ones who often was taking those. And I remember that being a parent sitting in the stands going, oh, please let him make it. Please let him make it. And if he made it, he was king. If he missed it or it hit the pipe or the keeper saved it, he was crushed. I mean, crushed.
It is a lot of pressure. My child played high school soccer as well. Matter of fact, as we've said before, one of your sons was actually her coach at mm-hmm. Magnet. One of her coaches at Magnet. She, her entire career, Cabosa High School, she never missed a PK.
Now, she
wasn't a huge taker. We had some people that took them more often than she did. But she took many in her career, and she never missed. But her mother and I lived and died every time. She was calm. She was cool. She was calm, cool, knew what she was
yes.
doing. But if you're in the stands, you are dying with your child out there.
My heart stops.
And this is, you are dying with your country watching.
Yes.
This is a country on edge every time one of these people, and it's really two people. It's only two. It's one person standing at the penalty spot, and it's the goalie.
Yeah.
And the goalies, the goalies have studied. The goalies know. They know when they get to that point, those goalies know your tendency to go right, to go left, to mm-hmm. go high. And it is just drama.
Oh, it is absolute drama. The USA team plays Wednesday, correct?
Plays Wednesday night. So we had one game last night, and so Canada moves on. They're in mm-hmm. the round of 16. There's now three games for the next five nights
yes.
to complete this round. We play the last game on Wednesday night. It's a night game on Wednesday. I believe we're playing in California.
Okay.
And we're playing Bosnia-Herzegovina.
Okay.
Who we should beat.
We should. And this, by the way, is the first time Canada has ever made it to the round of 16. So it's a big deal for the Canadians.
Yes. And so this has been a great tournament. Obviously, they expanded the field. Mm-hmm. So you are going to see things like we've already broken the World Cup attendance record for this World Cup. It's because we had twice as many games in the first round. So there's a lot of records going to be broken. And there's a lot of new teams in because the field was bigger.
Yeah.
But the big takeaway is there's a lot of countries that have never made it this far. The rise of Africa. There were a ton of African nation teams that are still in. You're going to watch them play.
Incredible.
So it's not just the European traditional powerhouses. Mm-hmm. There is up and down. There were upsets. And in fact, while we are favored to beat Bosnia-Herzegovina, we actually got a bad draw. The way some of the other groups worked out, we're now in a same sub-bracket with some really good teams, including maybe tournament favorite Spain.
Oh, boy. Spain looks good.
Yeah.
Spain looks really good. But we'll keep watch a game. I just encourage you, go watch a World Cup game. Watch the Wednesday USA game. Man, you'll get filled with patriotism. It really is incredible. Going to take Scott inside a courtroom in Baton Rouge to see what the arguments will be today with regard to the governor's executive order on teacher pay. We'll have that coming up in about 10 minutes right here. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Quick, Scott, before we get to when we come back, we're going to talk more about the big court hearing today that's going to be happening in Baton Rouge. I saw a little report that showed the U.S. is lagging behind other countries in putting restrictions in place for social media and children. But there's now an effort to push that. How do we walk that fine line about, putting restrictions in place for our children, and the government doing it, or parents doing it? How do we do that? Whose job is it to protect our children?
Well, ultimately, it's the job of the parents to protect the children. And I think you are going to see, philosophically, it's a huge issue. Because on the one hand, you have free speech. This country stands for free speech. On the other hand, I have an advertising background, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
Famously, we banned speech years ago with cigarettes and alcohol.
Right.
Matter of fact, that's why the famous Marlboro Man, but a lot of people our age especially know the Marlboro Man billboard. They weren't allowed to advertise on radio and TV.
Yeah.
They sponsored for a while. And so you can limit speech if it's for public health. They have been leery to do it in social media because it's definitely a free speech situation. But also we're seeing now AI is kind of reopening the debate.
Yes.
There have been some lawsuits. There's I get them all confused. Meta, Google, ABC, XYZ, whatever they are.
Sure.
One of them lost a huge lawsuit out in California recently.
Right.
Where it's now coming out where they were aware of the social ills and the potential bad on people's health of their programming. And yet they still send it out.
Yeah.
Programming meaning the AI.
Right.
That they were driving things to kids, that they weren't protecting kids.
Mm-hmm.
And there was also another famous case in the last year or two, and I'm not familiar with it, so I may mispronounce this, but Robolex or some kids game that really became a problem, and that became a lawsuit. And so I think you're seeing parents, society start to push back, running up against First, Second Amendment. But now it's the same thing with church, with religion. Where do you draw the line? Is it the role of the state to do that?
Right.
Or is it the role of the family to do that?
Mm-hmm.
But I think AI is making us reconsider this because now it's so powerful, it's simply going to have to be regulated at some level.
Absolutely. When we come back, big court hearing today on teacher stipends and the governor's executive order. We will kind of unravel that when we get back right here. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Back with my pal Scott Hughes, local political analyst. And probably one of the biggest stories happening today is what will be happening in a courtroom in Baton Rouge, where a judge has set a hearing for today after granting a temporary restraining order blocking the governor's executive order on education funding. The governor wanted school districts to use some of the MFP money, I think $168 million, to pay for a teacher's stipend. But challengers say the governor doesn't have the authority to make that demand. What does the judge hear today? What are the arguments in the court today from your viewpoint? What do you expect?
Well, I think the biggest argument you're going to see is the governor's act constitutional? And it's going to be interesting because there's one area of law that seems to clearly give the power and the authority of the MFP formula to the BSEE board. Mm-hmm. And in general, BSEE has long had the power and the ability and the requirement, quite frankly, to issue the funding formula. And because of the sensitivity and the politics involved, and I'm generalizing the overall rules here, basically BSEE puts the formula out and the legislature can accept it or reject it. They can't dabble with it.
No altering.
No. So they can say $5, $10, $20, whatever they say, the legislature can say we agree, or they can say no and send it back to BSEE.
And
then BSEE can put the number out again. So that's the way it works with the legislature and BSEE. BSEE did that. They put a number out. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, the legislature was counting on that number being $168 million less, I think, because they were counting on those constitutional amendments passing.
Sure.
That was going to move some money around. Well, when they failed, the people voted no on that plan. The legislature had a problem. And so what they've done effectively is that after the session was over, after House Bill 1, the appropriations bill, was passed, the governor basically used the governor's executive powers to play with the money. Okay, mm-hmm. to move the money. And this is where it's going to be interesting. For those, we're going to get geeky here now. For those that follow this, this is down in the 19th jurisdiction, 19th JDC, Baton Rouge, mm-hmm. Where all state cases get filed because that's East Baton Rouge Parish. The governor has some powers under what's called Article 8, Section 13B. This is the MFP formula.
Okay.
And what my read of what Article 8, Section 13B says is that the governor can remove money after it's been, this is sort of like a line item veto.
Okay.
Okay. And the way it says is after they pass House Bill 1, which includes the MFP formula as approved by the legislature, mm-hmm. which this was, okay, then after they do that, the governor can, with 2/3 written vote of the legislature, remove money. And so that's really what the governor's executive order does. He's executing his powers under Section 13B of Article 8 to remove money. But when you read the governor's executive order, he puts an and. This is the only law he references is this one, 13B, where he does have the power to remove money. But then he says, and I'm redirecting the parishes, the LEAs, local education authorities, the school boards, mm-hmm. I'm redirecting them to use the money they have to do this certain activity, which is to pay the stipends.
So I'm taking the money, and let's see if I can figure, I'm taking this money from you that we would be giving you,
that BSEE planned and the legislature approved.
But I'm going to give it back to you if you use it for teacher stipends.
I would say a little differently. I'm forcing you to give it to the teacher stipend. I'm not giving it back to you contingent. He's requiring them to use it.
So if you don't use it that way, you're not going to get it.
That is my understanding. Now, here's where it gets really tricky. And that the legislature passed another bill this year. It's House Bill 313, mm-hmm. HB 313. Minor detail, I haven't seen that it's been signed yet.
Okay.
But it has been enrolled. Okay. Right. And again, I'm not a lawyer. I always like to say that I'm not a lawyer, so I don't want to give legal mm-hmm. advice. But normally these bills are signed, and this one hasn't been signed yet. But that bill, what it seems to do on its surface, House Bill 313, seems to set up an automatic system whereby when the governor vetoes things, that was money appropriated by the legislature. And it specifically does say if he executes his authority under Article 8, Section 13B, this 2/3 thing we're talking about here, basically it authorizes the treasurer to pull those monies into a special fund.
Okay.
But here's the issue, and I read this one, that there's a subclause E in this House Bill 313. And it kind of says, notwithstanding any provision, et cetera, it says that these monies shall be pulled back. And here's the phrase I get to at the very end. It says in writing, no funding applicable to the instructional activity of city, parish, or other local public school systems or schools pursuant to the minimum foundation program formula shall be transferred pursuant to this subsection.
Oh.
So when you look at this court hearing, on the one hand, he's going to say, I have the power in 13B to eliminate money. Mm-hmm. But he's not eliminating money. He's moving it. That's one constitutional argument. The second one is, my read of the very place the money goes seems to indicate that they can't move money for instructional purposes.
Hmm. Okay.
So, interesting lawsuit. Overall, I said this last week when we had the union people on, this is a bad, in my opinion, way to go about this. And if this is allowed to stand, the downstream application of this is going to be horrible.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. Dr. Jeffrey Sato joining us after 8 o'clock. We'll unravel the election, what happened this weekend, and where we're headed now. That's coming up right here. 1017 FM, 710 Keel.
Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
Back with my pal Scott Hughes. I'm going to do political talk coming up after 8 o'clock with Dr. Jeffrey Sato. To discuss the election.
I'm looking forward to that. I like Dr. Sato.
Yeah, the fallout, what's going to happen in November.
I want to ask him what conservatives are going to do. That's the real question.
Yeah.
And he knows conservatives.
Are they going to stay away in November? What are they going to do? Will the Democrats come out in force? Because they sure didn't this weekend. That's for darn sure. Got an update from the Caddo Sheriff's Office. I appreciate the folks being, Johnny on the spot. With regard to the train derailment up on Highway 1, the 13,000 block of Highway 1, right there near Soda Point Drive, KCS, the call came in about 6:12 this morning. A deputy came across a minor train derailment. KCS was called in at 6:20 to advise they have a representative on the scene. We just now got an update. Three boxcars derailed. None of them have dangerous materials on them. CPKC Railroad Company is on the scene working to put the cars back on the track. Been advised it shouldn't cause any issues with traffic, no evacuations, anything like that has been called for. So this is not impacting traffic or travel in that area, but you will see some emergency crews up there because of this. Again, three cars derailed. Nobody hurt that we have any information about at this point, and none of them have any dangerous materials on them. So that definitely is good news. Did you vote early or did you vote this weekend?
I voted Saturday at my polling precinct. I don't say ahead of time, but I was out of town 10 straight days.
Oh, you're right.
For four different reasons.
Yes.
So I did not get to vote early, but I do like to go in on Saturdays.
I do too.
And say hi to the people working. Mm-hmm. And also, you probably the same way. Over the years, I get a feel. It tells me turnout. It tells me engagement. And it was crickets.
Crickets. Scott, I was voter number 5. And it was 3 hours in. I looked at the sheet and I said, am I really number 5? And they went, yep, it's going to be a long day.
We voted probably closer to 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning on our way to breakfast. And I think we were in the 20s. But I'm in one of the, I voted at Broadmoor Middle School. It's a Piermont precinct, but South Hines, Piermont, those are always great places. Voters turnout's always good in those areas. And when there's low voter turnout in those precincts.
Yeah.
Like I say, probably going to be ultimately around 15-16% voter turnout. And remember, you and I talked the first hour about this. Of the turnout, 1/3 of that was early voting.
Right.
So we talk about early voting, which is a combination of early voting by machine at the courthouse, library, or mail-in balloting. Those two together. And you put those together, and you're looking probably at 1/3 the vote now.
Okay, last minute before we have to take a break. Why aren't people voting? Why do people not go vote?
I do not know. I have almost a perfect voting record. I almost say perfect because I'm going to go check it and I missed one here or there. But since I was 18, I have almost a perfect voting record. I do not understand why people do not like to vote. I think deep down it's different for different reasons.
Yeah.
But generally they don't think it matters. They think the system's rigged, or they don't like the candidates, or they just don't think in the end of the day it matters. And that's sad. because it's highly important.
Yeah. And I think part of it, they don't trust government, too. They're like, I don't trust them to do right by me, so I'm not getting involved.
But that, I never understand that part. To me, the more you don't trust government, the more you should vote.
Yes.
The more you trust government, the more you back off and say, I'm okay.
They're doing a good job.
But we haven't seen that paradigm.
No.
We just see disengagement.
Yeah. People just don't care. They're not, they don't care about it. Something better to do. You know, I got to go, I got to do this, I got
to
do that.
Which, interestingly, in some states, it's why they went to the mail ballots, because they get higher turnout.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like we'll get higher turnout for American Idol. Vote by your phone than we do voting for politicians.
More on politics with Dr. Sato coming up after 8 right here on Keel. We're back. My friend Scott Hughes is in for Mike Martindale this morning, and on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, we are joined by Dr. Jeffrey Sato from LSU-S, political science professor. Good morning, sir.
Hi, guys.
Got to start with the election over the weekend. Julia Letlow, Jamie Davis, winners on the Republican and Democratic side, respectively. Any surprises for you?
No, not really. Certainly the Democrats' race, that seemed pretty foreordained. There was a lot of speculation on the Republican side of how the differential in turnout, which was probably only about 2/3 going to end up being this weekend as opposed to the primary election, how that was going to affect the outcome. But as we saw, Dr. John Fleming, the state treasurer, he did a little better proportionally with this election, but it wasn't nearly enough to overcome the large difference that he'd had with Representative Julia Letlow in the primary.
Good morning, Dr. Sato. Scott Hughes, always a pleasure to visit with you. As I watched the Post analysis on Sunday, social media commentary, I saw really anger from some of the far right. Where do you see, because I think many of us thought Letlow would win this, and it has set up this problem within the party now between what would be far-right conservatives, more moderate Republicans. Where do you see the far-right going? And then I guess the second question is, what impact did carbon capture have? I saw a lot of passion around the carbon capture issue in this race.
Yeah, let's start with the second one first. There was not a tremendous amount of difference between the candidates on the issues, but certainly the carbon capture issue was one. And so that was the one that came to the forefront, particularly coming from the Fleming camp in an attempt to demonstrate the conservative credentials of Fleming compared to those of Letlow. That's really something, of course, that's regulated at the state level. The federal government's involvement is in terms of the actual tax credit that's being offered for those activities. So, you know, on that issue, really the only thing that would happen is if there's some change in the budget or whatever that would alter or eliminate that particular subsidy. So in terms of regulation and the like, there's really nothing going on at the federal level. But that was something that did tend to segregate the two camps in terms of the voting preferences. In terms of the first question, and where the more conservative voters are going to go, what they're going to do in November, I don't see really much of a drop off. There might be a few individuals that are just so disgruntled that they're not going to vote in that election. But kind of the reaction I was seeing is that there was a resigned acceptance, let's say, of a Letlow candidacy and nomination in November. So I don't think that if there's any long-term bitterness that's going to affect the voting behavior in November. I don't see much of it.
And Dr. Sato, we have seen before on the Republican side, Risponi, we could go back through some other examples of where we've had these bitter fights and then we've had to come together. This time it's a little different. There's 5 months. We haven't had this closed primary cycle, then followed by a general 5 months later. Do you see a big difference in the ability for the party to come together around Letlow versus in the past we'd have that 30-day window?
Yeah, you look at this dynamic in other states, which have had for a long period of time. And in most cases, there's some that aren't, but in most cases, they do have a more substantial window than, say, 30 days or 5 weeks between those kinds of elections. And that is something that does tend to calm feelings down over time. The longer you have between the elections, the less upset people on the losing side are. So I think that's one of the reasons why you're not going to see much of an impact or much bitterness manifest itself in November by those particular voters deciding to stay home and not vote for the Republican nominee.
Dr. Sato, I've got to ask, because there's been a lot of criticism of Julia Letlow in that she got the president's endorsement. The governor seems to be pushing her. Will she be controlled by President Trump and or Governor Landry if she ultimately is elected?
Well, that's a good question. You look at the past, not just here in Louisiana, but in other places, in similar situations, and it's really unpredictable. I mean, sometimes you get people that would appear, not to be that assertive as a candidate, and seem to be more creatures of other interests behind them. And they turn out eventually to be quite assertive individuals in the elective office in terms of the kinds of things that they end up doing and voting for and the like. You've seen others that pretty much toe the line, although, again, the question there is, do they do it because they are not that assertive of individuals and they somehow feel some loyalty or are controlled in some way, or is it because there's just simply a community of ideological interests and they vote the same ways because that's just, they think they're on the same wavelength. So good question. Don't know how that's going to turn out.
Dr. Sato, up to this point, this has really been an ABC race, anybody but Cassidy. I think all of us that have watched this knew that it was all about getting rid of Cassidy for many voters in the first round, now two rounds. And now we wake up and Letlow finds herself against this guy named Jamie Davis. That's the race in November. For our listeners, who's Jamie Davis? They might not have ever heard about this guy. I think he's from Tensaw Parish.
Yeah, I'm a police juror, farmer for a living. That's who he is. And running as a Democrat, Black Democrat. I will make one prediction. I think he's going to do better than Adrian Perkins did 6 years ago.
But does he have a chance to beat her?
No. I can't use the Edwin Edwards phrase, live boy or dead girl.
Doesn't
fit as well. But that's about, in the spirit of that, yes, that's about the same chances that he has, I'm afraid, for his side.
Yeah, and I think nationwide, Dr. Sato, we've kind of seen, people have heard about this blue wave. We saw it over in Fort Worth. We've seen it around. The blue wave seems like even if it's there, it might be 10 points, 15 points. You still think this one's pretty safely outside of that type of a margin, even if Democrats get a blue wave in Louisiana?
Yeah, I would see it something like the way roughly the results of the nomination itself for the GOP. So, 15 points, something like that. Davis could probably crack 40%, but it's not going to be much beyond that. So no, there's just it's just not going to happen in Louisiana. And of course, Democrats, national Democrats, they're going to want to spend their money in other places that they think that they have a better chance, and there are several. So he can't really expect to get any of that national money, and that's something that's not going to be helpful for his chances.
Can you stick around? We got a few more questions for you when we come back.
Sure.
Wonderful. We will have more with Dr. Jeffrey Sato coming up next right here on Keel.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
Back on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, Dr. Jeffrey Sato, political science professor, LSUS. Jamie Davis won the Democratic side, Julia Letlow the Republican side in the Senate race. Does she debate him? Does she show up for these or no?
No, I don't think so. You know, the rule of thumb is if you've got a lead, and especially a big lead, you don't do anything like that because who knows what potentially disastrous thing you could say. So, I play keep away at this point. And that'd be great free publicity for the Democrat, but I don't think she's going to be accommodating in that way.
And Dr. Stein, the last question on the Fleming Letlow race, and then we may want to move on to this fall. But what is in the future for John Fleming? He ran the race, he doesn't move on, but he will be on the ballot again next year, if I remember correctly. He's still state treasurer, and he can run again. What do you see this as having any impact on his ability to run again for state treasurer?
No, if anything, it's improved his position there. He's got a many months preview he gave for his race next year, name recognition. So, I fully expect him to run, and it shouldn't have any problem with getting reelected. This was, if anything, boosted his stature.
All the talk prior to this election about Julia Letlow becoming the head of LSU and Jeff Landry then appointing himself senator, the stage could be set for that. Is that really, do you really think that could happen in Louisiana?
No, I would doubt that. It's just it's kind of a convoluted to way to get there. I think if the governor was really interested in that, he'd serve out his this term, obviously, and hope himself to get reelected to another one, then take a shot down the road. I mean, of course, Senator John Kennedy is getting up there a little in years, and so I mean, these spots are going to that spot's going to be open. So, yeah, if he was really serious in that, I think he'd take that path rather than this kind of tricky, convoluted path. Why would Letlow choose that path herself in order to get to where she'd want to go in this hypothetical situation? Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I don't give it a lot of credence.
Okay.
And so, Dr. Sato, now we have the Senate race set. As you and I talked a second ago, it's not until November. Time heals all wounds. I do think the party comes together around Letlow as the Republican nominee. That race will be on the ballot as the final. But we'll also have the first round of the 6 congressional races. And this is going to get very confusing for our listeners, but those are going to be back open primary, jungle primary, only 2 rounds, everybody together. Do you see any surprises coming in this 6 congressional? I'm going to maybe assume you think Mike Johnson's, Clay Higgins, Troy Carter, and Steve Scalise are all probably okay, that we're only going to see really activity in the Letlow's seat, the 5th, and then what happens in the new 6th district?
Yeah. Clay Higgins, too, I think is going to be pretty safe. That's where the action is going to be, those 2 districts. You can expect to see Mike Eccles running in the 5th again, Stuart Caffey, basically from the same area, different chamber. He's looking more and more likely to run there. Missy Cordell, I think she's going to probably stay in and contest that. In the 6th, we might see the likes of some of the people that were talked about earlier for the first.
You think Rick Edmonds drops down back home to the 6th district?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe see Dixon McMakin. Maybe he passed last time. Maybe he goes for it this time. So something like that. But with a common theme in there, and that is in those 2 districts, Republicans are going to run and a Republican's going to win in each.
What about Garrett Graves?
Good question. He hasn't seemed to make a lot of noise about that yet. There's still time, about a month, less than a month. No obvious activity, but he does have the name recognition, so possibly the last minute he does jump in.
Interesting. Well, we will watch. The Republicans sure spend a lot of money bashing each other. I hope they can raise some more between now and November.
Yeah, it does seem like a bottomless pit of money is required around these parts to be able to do all this.
Absolutely. Dr. Jeffrey Sato, thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Sato.
Sure.
Appreciate it. 101.7 FM, 710 Kiel.
Breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarthy on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel.
pretty busy weekend myself. I went to John Hussey's funeral Saturday morning at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton on Flournoy Lucas, and it was packed. The church was pretty crowded. Then they did a little reception afterward in the hall there. A lot of people from the, you know, from the city government back in the 80s were there.
Likely the most popular governor in the modern form of government.
Mayor.
Governor. Thank you. Likely the most popular mayor in Shreveport since the new form of government. Was the first mayor, I think, in the new form of government. Mm-hmm. Really defined the role.
Right. They did a, I think one of his family members was the priest who did the mass. It was an abbreviated Catholic mass. It wasn't a full mass. So it was a lot of familiar faces from years gone by. So may he rest in peace. He was very, very, I really, really loved him. I had a lot of respect for him and how he treated me as a 21-year-old green reporter.
And for the listeners, he was mayor in the 80s, 90s. We're talking a long time ago, but still very active until I saw him recently several times in the last year or two.
Mm-hmm. Saw him 6 months ago working out at the Y. Maybe it was 8 months, you know, doing some stretching and stuff. And I thought, holy cow, he's in his 90s.
And many of the people he hired, women, minorities, they still are in city government today. He redefined city government.
And then Saturday afternoon, I don't know how I get these gigs, had
food?
To judge.
Did it involve food?
Yeah. Had to judge the Southern.
What category did you judge?
I judged the desserts, but I got to taste it all. I got to try it. The Gentleman's Cooking Classic, which is a, you know, historic event that benefits
Southern University Shreveport.
Absolutely. The convention center. And, you know, like the sheriff comes out, the DA comes out, the
always
police
have.
Chief. They always come out. A lot of politicians come out. And they have chefs that help them prepare whatever it is their specialty. Man, it was some great food. Some great food. You know, all I had to judge was the desserts, thank goodness. And I had a panel of judges. So we did what we had to do. But, man, that event, if they call, I'm coming. I'm coming. I don't judge chili anymore. I'll just, you can understand why, but if they want me to come out and judge this one, I'm there.
Funeral, food, and football.
Yes, absolutely. And then last night I went to Texas Roadhouse and had dinner with some friends and a good steak, but man, that's a loud place.
Some of those places get kind of wild.
Yeah, it was crowded and loud and, you know, had good food. I'm not complaining.
You say it's your birthday? It's my birthday, too.
they do a lot of birthday singing. There's no doubt about that. I did reach out, by the way, to Jamie Davis to see if he could join us.
Democratic finalist mm-hmm. for the Senate.
And hopefully we will have him set up for one day this week and we'll get him on the air and hear. We don't know about him.
I mean, don't know much. He's kind of a country farmer from mm-hmm. Kensaw, I think. And I will say this. I don't know much about him. I'll be curious. But I've heard from many of my friends, he's not your normal Democrat in Louisiana. I hate to say it like that, mm-hmm. but in politics, he's not what you normally think of what you're getting on the Democratic side.
Absolutely. Definitely don't know about that. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
With my friend Scott Hughes, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel. And you've been keeping a close eye on the Supreme Court. We're anticipating some big, big rulings here in the next couple of days.
That's correct. We have less than a week to go. The term always ends at the end of June, 1st of July. And there's at least five or six major decisions left. They've put out one or two the last couple of weeks. But none of the big ones yet.
Mm, and the four that are on your list, the 14th Amendment, the birthright citizenship.
The biggest one outstanding is probably it's called birthright citizenship. It's the 14th Amendment, where it basically says all persons born in the United States are citizens and subject to the jurisdiction therein. Mm-hmm. And I think that the people challenging that are trying to say, no, just being born here doesn't mean you're a citizen.
Who's challenging that?
Quite frankly, the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. And I think they are trying to propose grandfathering in everyone that's here. And then going forward, you have to be the child of a citizen to be a citizen.
Okay.
And where they're going, and the quote was pretty It'll be a famous quote, because the truth is Supreme Court's going to probably uphold the 14th Amendment. Most court watchers believe the president's going to lose on this one. But what they're concerned about, which is called birth tourism, you know, that they're concerned that people are basically 9 months pregnant, traveling to the country. The baby's born by our laws. That's a U.S. citizen,
sure,
and gets citizenship. And that should stop. And they made that argument. It's the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
And they tried to say, we live in a new time.
That
air travel makes this possible. And Judge Roberts gave what may be a legendary statement for Judge Roberts. Yes, but it's the same Constitution.
Right, right.
It was a great statement. So that's the biggest one people are watching. There's also two cases that were argued together that deal with transgender athletes. That's a hot social topic, mm-hmm, that the court's being asked to rule on. There is a case, I believe it's out of Mississippi, but what it really deals with is early voting, mail-in balloting.
Okay.
In Mississippi, people are challenging that, can the ballots be received after Election Day? Can they be stamped before, stamped the day of? That whole issue with mail-in balloting is one of the ones that people are following.
And that would have implications nationwide.
That would have implications nationwide if they pass that. Now, the issue there is, and this is where we get questionable, I think, on philosophy sometimes, because you're either going to believe in states' rights or not. If you believe in states' rights, states have the right to set their rules.
Mm-hmm.
And so if a state says they do X, that's fine. But this case has gotten all the way to the Supreme Court by people challenging, I believe it's Mississippi's rule of when they, and I'm not an expert, I'm not a lawyer, not a Supreme Court attorney, definitely. And so I don't want to give facts in the case, but that's what it's about. When the ballot can be received, et cetera. And while it would be a Mississippi case, just like the Calais case was a Louisiana case,
right,
anything the Supreme Court says tends to have national impact. And the last series of ones that are coming out, they really deal with the executive power of the president. Can the president fire, and I quote, air quotes, independent agency head? So we're talking like someone like the Federal Reserve chairman. There are some of these pseudo-government agencies where someone is appointed, and historically they have served until their time is up. You can't fire them except for cause.
They've been kind of independent.
And that's the whole mm-hmm. point, is to make them independent. Well, President Trump, under an executive authority, you know, kind of idea, has been firing some of these people just because he wants to put his person in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And they have filed lawsuits, and the Supreme Court will rule today or later this week on, does the president have that power?
Does he have control of the Supreme Court? Some say he does, and that he may win that.
I will say this. No president's ever had control of the Supreme Court. I think, does he? Now, over time, most justices tend to follow. Justices aren't blue or red. They're not Republican or Democrat. But they do tend to be conservative, progressive.
Mm-hmm.
They do tend to say the Constitution means what it says when it was written, or we're going to interpret it this way. There are judicial philosophies. And so over time, Trump has gotten to a point, a lot of those Supreme Court justices, a lot of them think like he does. He picked them because they interpret things. And so I think it leans his way. But again, it's going to probably, they often go on the law. Like there was one last week that got the Haitians and the Somalians. There was a ruling the Supreme Court said that basically, yes, the president has the ability to end a certain type of citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
We grant this. And if there's a war, if there's a hurricane, we'll let people come here as refugees. Basically, they can seek asylum. We give them temporary. It's called temporary. I'm not an immigration expert. Temporary status. And the real question was, who can end that temporary status?
Hmm.
If the president by decree can give the status, can the president take it away?
Right.
And so the case was controversial because the president wanted to take it away for only Somalians and for Haitians. And there's a lot of political noise around that over the last 2 years. But the law question for the Supreme Court was, if the president issues it, can the president take it away? Take the politics aside.
Right.
And they ruled yes, because they can't find another way of how you would end it. Does Congress end something? The president starts? And so the court oftentimes gets boxed in a corner on the law, and the politics, we watch them, but they don't watch the politics as much, which is probably why the president will lose the 14th cold. Most people believe that the 14th is pretty clear. You're a citizen, and so they're not going to play politics with that.
We will watch. We'll let you know as soon as they make their decisions. 101.7 FM, 710 Kiel.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel.
with my friend Scott Hughes, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel. And as you know, I'm a big, have always been a big soccer fan. I was a soccer mom, still a soccer mom,
I guess. For both of your kids.
Yeah, my little one didn't play nearly as long as my older one, but they both played soccer. And it was, this World Cup for me is just fascinating. I'm just,
it's one of the best ever.
Riveted to it. And some of the teams you never would expect to do well are doing well. Several of the African teams are doing well. We're now down to the stage of the round of 32, where
called the round of 32,
knockout.
There's 16 games. Mm-hmm. This is now we're like an NCAA men's basketball tournament.
Yep.
It's single elimination.
Mm-hmm. Win or go home.
Or stay and, home if you're us.
Yes, exactly. And we had the first round yesterday. Canada was a winner.
There's 16 games. There was one yesterday, mm-hmm. and there will now be three games the next 5 days.
Yes.
That's 15, 3 times 5, plus the 1, 16.
Mm-hmm. Canada advances to the round of 16 for the first time ever.
Congratulations.
So,
and Canada did it without their best player, who got a leg broken in the first round. So that's
yes.
a really strong effort by Canada.
Absolutely.
They scored in the 95th minute, the plus 5.
Canada looks so good. They look so good. And I'm hoping they do well. The U.S. plays Wednesday. We play Bosnia-Herzegovina.
The third game, Bosnia-Herzegovina. And we haven't mentioned this yet. One of the reasons this is such a great World Cup, it's in our country and in our time zone.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes these games are played in the middle of the night, and
yes.
it's just crazy. We get to watch them live.
Now, these games in these knockout rounds, they cannot end in a tie, correct?
No, soccer is famous for allowing ties during the regular season. Even during pool play, ties are allowed. But when you get to single elimination, you must have a winner. And so they play two 45-minute halves, 90 minutes.
Yep.
Soccer has this crazy extra-minute rule that the referee doesn't... It's to prevent stalling and delaying.
Sure.
The referee can add time. Well, when the 90 minutes are over, plus, if it's still tied, the World Cup rules, because each tournament may have different rules, the World Cup rules say we're going to play 30 more minutes, two 15-minute halves.
Okay.
And those are kind of like the new NFL overtime. You're going to play it regardless, okay?
Okay.
To a degree.
So you're not waiting until somebody scores.
It's not about who scores. You're going to play 15 minutes. There could be no goals scored. You're going to play another 15 minutes. There could be three goals scored. It's just, you're going to play the full 30 extra minutes plus.
Right.
And then ideally somebody scores, and there's a different score, 2-1, 3-2, mm-hmm. and that's the winner. Or if it's still tied after 90, after 30, you go to the greatest thing in sports.
Oh. Yeah, you go to the shootout. And
penalty kick shootout called mm-hmm. PKs.
Yes, and PKs are five members from each team step up, shoot from the, 18-yard line, correct?
Yeah, about the 12-meter mark, something
yeah.
like that.
And they, each one, you alternate between the teams. The tension, the drama. If you want drama in sports, watch one of these PK shootouts. It is absolutely riveting because you know the weight of that whole country is on that young man's shoulders.
It's one-on-one. Even world-class goalies cannot cover the whole goal. It's a huge goal. They're great athletes. The goalie cannot move. The goalie has to stand on the line, and the goalie cannot move until the player strikes the ball.
Yeah.
That is kind of the rule.
Mm-hmm.
The player's trying to dink them, trying to do different things. But the goalies study. These goalies aren't
yes.
just going out there going, but the goalie has to guess. The goalie has to say, oh, they go right 90% of the time. I think he's going left this time. Because the only way that you really stop a world-class PK shooter, it's really only two things. Number one, they miss.
Yes.
And that happens a lot. They hit the bar. They try to be too perfect.
Mm-hmm.
The enemy of perfection is the enemy of good is perfect.
Right.
And they miss. Or the goalie guesses right. The goalie says
yeah.
he's going upper left corner. I jump and I get it because these guys hit this thing 90 miles an hour and they don't miss.
Absolutely. And it is absolutely beautiful. And if the after those five players from each team,
if you're still tied,
take their shots.
If four people make it and one miss for each team, it's called 4-4. Then it's like baseball. It's an extra inning, one shooter at a time.
Mm-hmm.
But each side goes.
Yep.
Each side, if they may make first and you go second. And it's highly drama.
The drama is absolutely amazing. And it's interesting because the players that can take the PKs have to be on the field at the end of the game. They have to be in the on the field in the lineup.
They have to be some of the 11 players that were on the field. And yes, if you go through all 11, then you start over again. The goalie can shoot.
Yes.
And you see that sometimes. So goalies are powerful kickers. Some of them can take them very, very well.
Absolutely. Hope we'll have Jamie Davis joining us tomorrow, maybe the next day. We'll work on that. He's the Democratic Senate candidate. We'll have other great guests talking about the
election.
An
invitation to Letlow anytime, correct?
Absolutely. Julia Letlow.
You've invited her for weeks.
And I'll call again. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.